As Good as Dead isn't just another thriller. It's the haunting finale to Holly Jackson's groundbreaking A Good Girl's Guide to Murder trilogy that has captivated millions worldwide. This conclusion takes readers on a psychological descent that feels both inevitable and shocking. Since its 2021 release, the book has become a TikTok sensation with over 200 million views under its hashtag, while the series has spent 150-plus weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. Jackson's unflinching examination of trauma and justice has earned praise from Stephen King, who called it a standout among contemporary YA mysteries. What begins as a stalking story transforms into something far more sinister, forcing readers to question how far they'd go when the justice system fails. Are you ready to follow Pip Fitzamobi into the darkness one last time? Dead eyes follow Pip everywhere now. Once a brilliant student detective who solved two major cases, Pip Fitzamobi is barely holding herself together. The trauma of her previous investigations, particularly the death of Stanley Forbes, has left her dependent on illegally purchased Xanax just to sleep. Her relationship with Ravi Singh provides brief moments of normalcy, but even his warm presence can't keep the darkness at bay for long. Strange incidents begin accumulating around Pip's home. Dead pigeons on her driveway, one grotesquely decapitated, chalk figures drawn progressively closer to her house, and anonymous messages asking the same chilling question: who will look for you when you're the one who disappears? When "Dead Girl Walking" appears written in chalk on her running route, Pip can no longer deny the pattern. Someone is stalking her with increasingly threatening gestures. Despite meticulously documenting these incidents, Pip finds herself dismissed by Detective Inspector Hawkins, who suggests neighborhood cats might be responsible for the dead birds, and the chalk markings could be children's games. His dismissive attitude only strengthens Pip's conviction that these aren't random occurrences, but calculated acts from someone who has been watching her for months. What initially seems like a new mystery to solve becomes deeply personal when Pip discovers an article about the DT killer, a serial murderer who killed five women in nearby towns before being caught in 2012. The stalking methods match exactly what she's experiencing: headless pigeons, chalk figures, silent phone calls. Even more disturbing, the DT killer's final victim was murdered the same night Andy Bell disappeared, the case that started Pip's investigative journey. The connections between Pip's stalker and the DT killer case grow stronger when she contacts Maria Karas, mother of Billy Karas, the man convicted of the DT murders. Maria insists her son gave a false confession after 9 hours of coercive police interrogation. The evidence against Billy was circumstantial. He discovered one victim's body at his workplace, knew another victim who was his supervisor, his work van was seen near where another victim was found, and he had access to the same duct tape used in the murders. All these connections trace back to Billy's employer, Green Scene Limited, a landscaping company owned by Jason Bell, father of Andy Bell, the girl whose disappearance Pip investigated in her first case. This startling revelation forces Pip to reconsider everything she thought she knew about both cases. Pip interviews Harriet Hunter, sister of Julia Hunter, the DT killer's fourth victim. Harriet confirms that before Julia's murder, two headless pigeons appeared at their home, and chalk figures were drawn near their driveway. Julia had also received silent calls from blocked numbers, exactly matching Pip's current experiences. The conversation takes an unexpected turn when Harriet casually mentions Andy Bell. It turns out that after Julia's murder, Andy reached out to Harriet via email, offering support. They became friends who met weekly, creating another strange connection between Pip's cases. When Pip gains access to Andy's secret email account, she discovers a chilling draft message. Andy knew who the DT killer was. She had seen him with Julia Hunter days before her murder and recognized him as someone close to her family, someone who sat at their dinner table. Terrified, Andy had been planning her escape when she disappeared. As the stalking escalates, Pip receives a call from an unknown number. Using an app to unmask the caller, she discovers it's Jason Bell. When she calls the number back, she hears the phone ringing not just through her phone, but directly behind her. Before she can scream, arms grab her from behind, a hand covering her mouth, an arm tightening around her neck. As Pip struggles for breath, her consciousness fades. She awakens in the trunk of a moving car, bound with duct tape. Jason Bell takes her to Green Scene LTD, an industrial complex where he reveals all his victims died. He admits to disabling the security system and CCTV cameras, assuring her no one will come until Monday morning. Left alone in terrifying darkness, Pip realizes this matches the DT killer's pattern. He always leaves his victims alone for a period before returning to kill them. Drawing on her determination and intelligence, Pip manages an incredible escape. She frees herself from restraints, tips over the shelving unit she was bound to, and finds a hammer. When Jason returns unexpectedly, Pip is forced to fight for her life. In the violent struggle that follows, she kills Jason Bell in self-defense. In shock, but thinking clearly, Pip calls Ravi for help. Together, they develop an elaborate plan to cover up Jason's murder by framing Max Hastings, the man who raped Kara Ward and escaped justice in Pip's previous case. They manipulate the time of death by cooling Jason's body with air conditioning, then warming it back up to make it appear he died hours later when they both have alibis. What follows is a meticulously orchestrated plan worthy of the best crime fiction. Pip and Ravi enlist friends to help establish alibis while they stage evidence against Max. Using Rohypnol purchased from her drug dealer, Pip drugs Max's water bottle, then steals his hoodie, shoes, and cap while he's unconscious. They position Jason's body in the woods, plant Max's hairs on the corpse, leave Max's distinctive shoe prints in the mud, and even step in Jason's blood to create footprints leading away from the scene, after setting fire to Jason's car and the storeroom to ensure police discover the body, they drive Max's car through traffic cameras to further implicate him, then carefully return his belongings to their original places while he remains drugged on his sofa. The plan works perfectly, until Pip discovers her headphones were found at the murder scene. Having fallen out when Jason grabbed her, they create a direct link between her and the crime. Despite her carefully constructed alibi for the manipulated time of death, this evidence could lead to a DNA warrant that would unravel everything. Faced with this devastating development, Pip makes the heartbreaking decision to confess. She believes the only way to protect everyone who helped her is to take full responsibility. She plans her confession carefully. She'll claim she killed Jason around 8 p.m., before Ravi's alibi begins, then manipulated the body temperature before meeting her friends, who knew nothing of her actions. Before turning herself in, Pip makes the crucial decision to help exonerate Billy Karras by meticulously documenting evidence that links Jason Bell to the DT killings. Through careful investigation, she's identified significant trophies Jason kept from his victims, items that carry profound emotional weight, a delicate gold coin necklace that once belonged to his wife Dawn, and distinctive rose gold earrings with pale green stones that were his daughter Becca's prized possession. These items, combined with Andy's unfinished but revealing email draft, form a compelling case that could finally free an innocent man from wrongful imprisonment. During her meeting with D.I. Hawkins at the station, Pip discovers the police have already begun unraveling the threads connecting Jason to the DT killings. The investigation reveals a pattern far more sinister than initially suspected. News reports soon expose the full horrifying scope of Jason Bell's crimes. He wasn't just the DT killer, but had operated under another terrifying identity, the Southeast Stalker. This serial rapist had terrorized communities throughout the early 1990s, only stopping his attacks around the time of Andy's birth in 1994. The pattern shifted dramatically when Andy turned 15, marking Jason's evolution from stalker to killer, a chilling progression that suggests his own daughter's coming of age may have triggered this escalation. The justice system moves swiftly once the evidence comes to light. Billy Karras, who had been wrongfully imprisoned, is released as all charges against him are dropped. The relief of his exoneration ripples through the community. though it's tempered by the shocking revelations about Jason's true nature. The case takes another dramatic turn when Max Hastings is arrested for Jason's murder. The evidence against him appears overwhelming. Investigators recover his blood-stained hoodie hidden in his garage, match distinctive shoe prints from the crime scene to his exact shoe size and brand, and find his DNA on Jason's body. While this arrest should feel like closure, a neat resolution to a complex case, Pip can't shake an unsettling feeling about the whole situation. D.I. Hawkins' behavior during their last interaction suggests he hasn't fully accepted her version of events. His parting words, "I'll come find you when I'm done," hang in the air with ambiguous meaning, somewhere between a promise and a threat. The calculated way he delivers this message leaves Pip wondering whether she's truly seen the last of this investigation, or if Hawkins is quietly pursuing a different theory about what really happened to Jason Bell. Realizing she can never truly rest while suspicion hangs over her, Pip makes an agonizing decision. She must cut herself off from everyone she loves to protect them, especially Ravi. If Max is found not guilty at trial, the investigation will turn to her, and she can't risk Ravi being charged as an accessory. In a heart-wrenching scene in Lodge Wood, Pip tells Ravi they can never see each other again. Despite his desperate protests and suggestion they could marry for spousal privilege, Pip walks away, knowing this separation is the only way to protect him. 72 days into her self-imposed exile in Cambridge, Pip counts each passing day. She gradually distances herself from her family, planning to stay at university over Christmas break. In her lonely purgatory, she makes promises about how she'll be different if she ever gets her life back. Being a better sister to Josh, appreciating her parents, prioritizing her friends, and telling Becca the truth about Andy and their father. Most of all, she thinks of Ravi constantly, speaking to an imagined version of him when she's scared or lonely, desperately trying to preserve the memory of his voice as it begins to fade. She realizes the jury in Max's trial will determine not just his fate, but her own. As the novel closes, Pip continues forward, one foot in front of the other, holding on to hope that something good might be waiting for her at the end. At its core, As Good as Dead explores the devastating consequences of trauma and the moral ambiguity of justice. Before the events of this book, Pip was already struggling with the ethical contradictions of her previous cases. Elliot Ward wasn't purely evil despite his crimes. Max Hastings was clearly dangerous, but manipulated the system to escape justice. Becca Bell remains a fundamentally good person, serving time in prison for a crime committed under extreme circumstances. These contradictions had gradually undone her psychological stability, leaving her dependent on prescription drugs, plagued by vivid nightmares, and questioning everything she once believed about right and wrong. The complexities of her past cases created deep fissures in Pip's worldview, challenging her previously black-and-white understanding of justice. Her experiences showed her that the legal system often fails both victims and perpetrators, sometimes simultaneously. The trauma of witnessing these failures manifests in her increasing isolation, paranoia, and inability to maintain normal relationships with friends and family who can't understand the depth of her disillusionment. When faced with Jason Bell, a true monster with no redeeming qualities, who has murdered multiple women and now threatens Pip's life, she initially sees an opportunity for redemption. Here, finally, is a case with seemingly clear moral lines, a serial killer who deserves punishment and who the system has failed to stop. Yet her subsequent actions to cover up his death and frame Max Hastings, however justified they might feel in the moment, plunge her deeper into moral complexity and ethical compromise. The novel forces readers to confront uncomfortable questions that echo beyond its pages. Is vigilante justice ever acceptable when traditional legal channels prove inadequate? If the legal system fails to protect the vulnerable, do individuals have the right, or perhaps even the responsibility, to create their own justice? What is the psychological and moral cost of taking justice into one's own hands? For Pip, that cost proves devastating. Complete separation from everyone she loves, a life in perpetual fear of discovery, and the gradual erosion of her own moral certainty. The book suggests that justice, rather than being an absolute concept, exists on a spectrum where right and wrong often blur together. Through Pip's descent into moral compromise, readers must grapple with their own beliefs about justice, revenge, and the price of taking action against evil when conventional methods fail. Her journey demonstrates how trauma can push even the most principled person to cross lines they never thought possible, raising questions about whether true justice is ever achievable in an imperfect world. Holly Jackson masterfully illustrates how violence creates ripples that extend far beyond the initial act, transforming lives in ways both immediate and long-lasting. Jason Bell's crimes as the DT killer devastated not only his direct victims, but created generational trauma that reverberated through entire families. Harriet Hunter, who lost her sister, exemplifies how a single act of violence can permanently alter someone's life trajectory. Her grief manifested in decades of isolation and obsessive documentation of similar crimes. The psychological impact extended to the broader Little Kilton community, where parents became overprotective, teenagers lost their sense of security, and an atmosphere of perpetual suspicion took root. Belle's actions set in motion a complex chain of events that would eventually lead to Andy's elaborate escape plan. Her desperate bid for freedom, born from the terror of living under Belle's control, became the catalyst for the entire trilogy's events, demonstrating how violence can echo through time, creating new victims years after the initial crimes. The investigation into Belle's murders also exposed other buried secrets and crimes, showing how one act of violence often unveils others. Similarly, Pip's act of self-defense against Jason creates ripples that threaten to drown everyone around her. While the act itself might be justified, its consequences spread outward like poison through water. Her decision to frame Max Hastings carries its own moral weight, though poetically just, given his previous escape from legal consequences for rape, it draws her friends into an ever-tightening web of conspiracy and moral compromise. Each person who helps maintain her secret becomes both protector and accomplice, their lives forever altered by their participation in the cover-up. The novel suggests that violence, even when seemingly justified, always exacts a price far greater than initially apparent. For Pip, that price manifests in multiple dimensions: the loss of her carefully planned future, the erosion of her closest relationships, and the constant threat to her freedom. Her final choice to isolate herself represents both an acknowledgement of these ripple effects and a last desperate attempt at damage control. By removing herself from the equation, she hopes to contain the spread of consequences to those she loves. The question that haunts the final pages is whether this price was worth paying, whether justice for Jason's victims and punishment for Max's crimes justify the destruction of Pip's life and the moral compromise of her allies. Jackson leaves readers to grapple with this ethical dilemma, suggesting that in a world of violence, there are no truly clean solutions, only choices between different kinds of damage. Despite its bleak themes, As Good as Dead offers profound glimmers of hope through its nuanced exploration of love and loyalty. Ravi's unwavering support for Pip serves as the emotional anchor of the story. Even when he discovers the full extent of her actions, his love never wavers. This steadfast devotion manifests in small but significant ways, from his late-night phone calls checking on her mental state to his willingness to challenge her decisions while still standing by her side. Similarly, the loyalty of Pip's friends, Kara, Naomi, Jamie, Connor, and Nat, who help her without fully understanding the gravity of the situation, demonstrates the profound depth of true friendship. Their trust in Pip's judgment, even when faced with increasingly troubling circumstances, speaks to the bonds they've forged throughout the trilogy. The complexity of Pip's final act of self-sacrifice reveals multiple layers of love and protection. While fundamentally heartbreaking, her decision to remove herself from her loved ones' lives shows remarkable emotional maturity and selflessness. She recognizes that her presence could taint their futures and potentially implicate them in her actions. Through this choice, Pip demonstrates that even at her darkest moment, when she's committed acts she never thought herself capable of, her capacity for love remains her defining characteristic. This suggests that no matter how far we descend into moral ambiguity, our essential humanity can survive if we maintain our connections with others, even if those connections must be severed for the greater good. The novel's deliberately ambiguous ending, with Pip physically alone but still moving forward, creates a space for readers to contemplate the nature of redemption and forgiveness. Jackson crafts this conclusion with subtle hints that suggest possibility rather than finality. The mention of Max's ongoing trial implies that time continues to move forward, and with it, the potential for change. Perhaps someday, when the media frenzy dies down and the sharp edges of memory soften, Pip might find her way back to those she loves. This delicate thread of hope amidst overwhelming darkness becomes the trilogy's most powerful statement, that even in the aftermath of our worst decisions, the possibility of redemption remains alive, waiting in the wings of an uncertain future. The way Jackson weaves these themes of hope through the darkness creates a compelling commentary on the resilience of human connection. Through Pip's journey, we see how love can simultaneously be our greatest vulnerability and our strongest shield, how loyalty can both save and destroy us, and how hope can persist even in the most desperate circumstances. As the trilogy concludes, Jackson offers a nuanced examination of trauma's lasting impact, delving deep into the psychological aftermath of violence and fear. Pip's journey from bright, optimistic student to isolated fugitive illustrates how trauma can fundamentally alter a person's identity and worldview. Her transformation manifests in multiple ways, from her increasing dependence on Xanax to manage anxiety, to her persistent nightmares that fragment her sleep, to her constant hypervigilance that turns every stranger into a potential threat. These symptoms aren't merely plot devices, but realistic portrayals of post-traumatic stress, carefully woven into the fabric of her daily existence. The physical manifestations of Pip's trauma are equally well documented. The trembling hands when she hears unexpected noises, the racing heart in crowded spaces, the exhaustion from constantly being on alert. Jackson shows how trauma reshapes not just the mind, but the body's responses to the world. Through Pip's experiences, readers witness how past events echo through present moments, creating ripples that affect everything from casual interactions to life-altering decisions. Yet the novel also suggests that trauma doesn't have to be the end of the story. Even in her exile, Pip makes specific promises about who she'll be if she ever gets her life back. She dreams of returning to university, of rebuilding relationships with her family, of finding ways to help others who have experienced similar ordeals. These aspirations demonstrate her resilience and desire to grow beyond her traumatic experiences. The fact that she continues to move forward, one foot in front of the other, suggests that survival is possible even after the most devastating events. The supporting characters further illuminate different responses to trauma. Ravi's unwavering support shows how relationships can anchor someone through their darkest moments, while Kara's struggle with guilt and grief presents another face of trauma's impact. Through these varied perspectives, Jackson creates a rich tapestry of human responses to extreme circumstances. In this way, As Good as Dead offers a complex message about trauma. It acknowledges its destructive power while refusing to define its characters solely as victims. Pip may be damaged by her experiences, but she remains fundamentally herself, intelligent, determined, and capable of profound love. Her ability to maintain her core identity while adapting to new realities suggests that healing, while neither simple nor linear, is possible. This nuanced portrayal of trauma's effects makes the novel not just a thrilling conclusion to a mystery series, but a thoughtful exploration of human resilience in the face of overwhelming darkness, offering hope without minimizing the real and lasting impact of traumatic experiences.